So, welcome everyone to the Edward Hutchinson podcast. This is the third ever podcast that we've done of this. I am joined today by Mr. Chris Ricks, who is actually an agent who works in our office on Rodeo Drive with Compass, and actually was with Pacific Union prior to that, and Partners Trust for a couple of days,
correct,
Chris?
A month.
It was like you joined Partners Trust.
I arrived right when I knew that was all going down, maybe before you did.
Really, yeah, and then I'm like, what's going on? Yeah. So actually, Chris and I have been part of the same, or three different brokerages being the same kind of spot over the last year and a half, 2 years now?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it's over a year now.
Over a year.
But
anyway, guys, welcome to the podcast. I hope you guys are good wherever you are. As I kind of discussed in previous podcasts, we're trying to do a new thing in 2019. I was actually, Chris, and I don't know if you ever heard, but I was on Anchor, which is quite a good little podcast app, which actually all of you guys should check out, where you can literally just record off your phone, you set it out as a podcast, and it goes to iTunes, it goes to everywhere, which is
perfect.
Kind of awesome. What I was doing was I was doing the day-to-day updates. Oh, what have I done today? I'd upload a new one every day, and it got boring. Because our job can be amazing.
And it can be boring.
And it can be very boring, yeah, exactly.
Especially the back side of our job. It's not the glam that you think.
No, it's not. And there's a huge amount of just consistency. Like, oh, I made 100 outbound phone calls today, etc., etc. But anyway, welcome, Chris. Just to give you guys a little bit of background, I'm going to ask Chris about him, give his kind of where he's from and that kind of background to it. But Chris has actually been a real estate agent for a lot longer than I have. Obviously, I was a real estate agent in London, then moved over to LA, so I've been a real estate agent, I think, now for coming up on 7 years, but you've probably been over double that time.
Yep, 15 years as 15 of this
years.
Year.
Wow.
That's so wild as that.
So that is pretty crazy.
Seems to me.
So actually, we've had Scott Simon previously, who you met the other day,
right.
Really liked him. He's obviously a year and a half in, I'm kind of 7 years in, and I feel like we kind of got his initial feedback on what it's like to start as an agent, what it's become, what his kind of things he's found successful. I can kind of give that middle ground where I've been in it for a little bit of time and I've done a couple of markets, but obviously they work very differently. And I feel like actually, Chris, you could give our listeners and our viewers a really interesting take on somebody who's been in the industry for like twice as long as I have. So it's probably seen a lot change over that time.
Yeah, and it can all dial back to one word, and that's called communication. And you can call that communication several different types of languages. And it's not Spanish, Chinese, Japanese. It's Facebook, Realtor.com,
yeah.
Instagram. And that communication goes to the tech world. And if you fail to progress in tech, you're no longer communicating with your buyer clients, with your other agents.
Definitely.
So there's a change. And
so you've seen that change massively.
Absolutely.
So Chris, can you give our listeners just a little bit of background about you, yourself, who you are, where you've come from, and then we can kind of go from there.
Okay, so I have been in sales, different types of sales, pretty much my whole life.
Not just real estate?
No. I started out in restaurants just because that just kind of happened. And then
selling meals in restaurants?
Yeah, like actually server.
Oh, amazing. I was going to say, like, selling restaurants?
And I'm
like commercial real estate side?
And then, so, you know, there's that whole thing where your server doesn't know anything about anything, and you're like, well, what the hell are you here for, you know? And I want to know what's, you know, so you sell them the dessert, you sell them the extra topping, whatever, and that just seems like the easiest thing in the world, right? Well, then I went into, I did a short stint in the medical field.
Wow.
Right out of, you know, like college age, I went into, ran three operating rooms. And
so you're one of those like reps who's in the operating theater.
I literally,
testing out the equipment.
I actually was I was a medical assistant. I mean, I assisted in surgery and I ran three operating rooms in Memphis, Tennessee. And we did eye surgery, like retinal surgery. It was the craziest thing. It was a really interesting time of my life. And that showed me that I did not want to proceed in the medical field.
Okay.
I did it for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, something like that. It was very interesting. I enjoyed it. But I didn't want to be in the medical field. So fast forward, restaurants, that got kind of boring, and bartending and managing and all of the things that you do in a restaurant. And
but all face-to-face roles.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
And that's big, I find, in our industry.
Yes. So got to a point where even really before the whole classic cocktail craze happened.
Yeah.
And that's such a crazy thing too, because I literally watched that happen. But before it happened, I was on classic cocktails and, you know, making Manhattans and old fashions and doing really fancy drinks and having fun with it. And that spun me into the eyes of liquor distributors, because they depend on bartenders who know how to sell and create and craft and influence all of that and wine. So then I got courted by a liquor distributor, Glazer, which is I think the largest liquor distributor in the United States now, Glazer Wholesale Drug Company.
And I think they just go by Glazer.
This was in the South, in Arkansas.
So,
but I lived in a few different places. I've worked in New Orleans. I worked in Memphis, Tennessee.
And were you born in Arkansas?
I was born in Arkansas.
Okay.
Hot Springs, Arkansas.
So then left and then kind of came
boy
back.
Boyhood home of President Bill Clinton.
Yeah, amazing. I love it.
There's a positive there. Yeah, I kind of, my family's still there. That's where my brokerage is. But left the liquor business. That was fun. I had like 200 accounts that I was calling on and selling in liquor, beer, and wine, taking tap handles, moving in product.
Is that like a day-to-day, you're driving from bar to bar and like up in
restaurants, bars, hotels, some package stores, convenience stores, etc. Wow. And if there is a Bud Light, then I need to be putting in Red Stripe or Sierra Nevada or something like that, you know? So it was kind of a really interesting time. The other thing I did was I wrote wine lists and got people published in Wine Spectator.
That's awesome.
Did wine dinners and things like that. I didn't even know what it was. Hell, I was 22 years old, running around with
21
being that. Like, I had a license to carry booze in open container. What is that?
That's pretty cool.
At that age? Yeah. Are you kidding me? And I like to throw parties, and I have a background in the service industry? Come on.
That's asking for trouble.
Da-dum. So I did that whole sales job there, and that got eyes of wine distributors, which I still have relationships with California wineries. And I really enjoy those relationships because I know their brands. And I've been with them since, I didn't even realize it, but like Rombauer, one of my favorite wineries. You know, that's kind of when they were, that was an instrumental part of their kickoff as a brand. And I was selling it by the glass and turning people onto it. So that's, so fast forward, sales, a common thing here.
Best thing to do in terms of cutting your teeth about then going into the real estate industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, I had no idea. Then I opened my own restaurant. So I had 4 restaurants. So once again, direct sales, that's kind of the absolute top. If you're going to own a restaurant, you might need to make sure product moves through it.
And I think it's maintaining relationships.
Maintaining relationships, knowing the customer. You know, and I trained, all my staff, you know, like the prick. I didn't just hire them, I trained them and taught them how. And one of my guys, Logan McGeer, he's in Washington, D.C. He's got 4 restaurants he's rocking. Right. He pays me props on his website, and he started in the business with me.
That's awesome.
And it's sales, and he gets it. And he's doing a great job out in D.C. I'm so excited for him, but I'm excited about that because, you know, I got tired of the restaurant business. I got lots of great reviews. I was even written up in the L.A. Times before I ever even knew about moving here. I can show you that sometime. It's kind of interesting, my little free light to L.A.
I love that.
But I couldn't do it anymore. It's exhausting. It was like repetition, and I didn't feel like I was at my potential. I felt like I'd reached a certain level in the restaurant business.
Burnt out, kind of?
I was no longer stimulated.
Okay.
Like, I'm the type of person that needs to be able to recreate and be able to be out and about and do, and I felt like I had kind of just reached a
plateau.
And I wasn't really interested in franchising. I wasn't interested in, you know, everything you can do with a restaurant. I was just done. So I was ready to do something totally different. Real estate. I got into real estate because...
So what was that? You just kind of saw a
You're going to live for this.
Yeah.
You're going to live for this. Arkansas.
Yeah.
Back in that day, which was 99.
Yeah.
And prices are much less than they are in L.A.
Yes.
I had $100,000 that I could buy anything I wanted to with. And I wanted a very simple 2-bedroom house, good closets, good quality. And I couldn't... There were a few realtors that used to frequent my establishment, and I told them, like, hey, you know, this is what I want. And they couldn't seem to figure out how to get me in a property. So I found it on my own. I had no idea what I was doing at that time frame. And the level of tell an agent what you want, they provide it for you because that's their job, right? They didn't even listen to what I was asking for. Very simple.
I suppose in 99, that must have been early days of the internet, I mean, where probably a lot of the business, it wasn't like all the listings
were. You have the hippest restaurant in town. Yeah. Everyone's coming to it. And at that time, you could just pretty much buy the whole town for that price point. I had no idea about hindsight.
Really?
And I tell them, hey, yo, I want a badass house. I'm like, you can't hear me saying I want a badass house. Did I misspeak? I'm 24 now.
Yeah.
Sell me a house. It's easy, right? So that didn't happen. I found my own house, bought, and
sold. How did you find it, though?
At a garage sale.
So you went to a garage sale, turned around to the owner, started chatting with them, and they said,
yeah, basically. Basically,
wow.
There was one realtor bud that I'm still acquainted with at this day and time was like, hey, stop by this estate sale. I don't know if you'll be interested or not. I mean, like, never turn your client loose.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know. I went and bought the damn house. Simple. Yeah. The end. Buy it. Let's go. I bought two. I bought that one and the one next door.
Okay.
Because it was in my budget. Fast forward, I want to sell my restaurant. No one could help me. Like, it was so foreign to just...
In terms of no one could help you, you couldn't find a buyer for
they
it?
They didn't understand the concept of marketing a business, building, and land.
Okay.
And a restaurant, you know, that's a niche knowledge. How to broker a restaurant, who to market it to.
What's the value? Because presumably it's based on what kind of sales you're doing, the walkability.
Are you cooking your books? Are you not cooking your books? Where are you with your taxes for real? Mm-hmm. There's a lot to it. There's layers. I know that. You need a business broker? Call Chris Ricks. So that's what got me into it. I didn't feel like the realtor community was available when I needed to buy and sell.
So you residential saw a gap in and the commercial. And
I was ready to get out of the business, and I thought, well, I asked a realtor person that ended up becoming my first broker, what do you think if I do this? And she tried to kind of help me in the sell the business, but it just wasn't the level of service that I felt like I could give.
Yeah.
So I got my license, and right out of the gate, had a few listings, took a little hiatus to Maui for a year and a half.
How did you pick up your first listings? In what year was this?
This would have been 2005.
2005?
Yes.
So a couple of years of you, like, going and finding a house, buying it, trying to sell your restaurant, kind of thinking, like, getting a bit, like, what's going on here? Why is there not someone who can provide this service for me in this area?
Right. I've always been in a service-providing business, yeah. And I know that if you're going to work with someone and they're trying to use your service, you need to provide service. And what is funny to me is I feel like the United States as a whole has forgotten that doctors, lawyers, realtors, people that serve food, we're all in the same business. It's called the service industry.
Yeah.
It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I find that actually, what I find with the US as opposed to where I've been in the world or like come from is there's a big value for service in the US, no matter what you're doing, as long as you're like face to face with the consumer.
Agreed.
Whereas in the UK, there's a huge amount of value put on doctors, lawyers, etc. The actual server in the restaurant is tips are not a thing, really.
Right.
So basically, you kind of have a situation where that role is actually not filled by anyone who sees that as a career.
Right.
It's only filled by young people.
Understood.
Who are, yeah, trying to
Understood.
Fill that gap. And like,
yeah, that's several countries.
And right. And I really like going to a restaurant here.
Mm-hmm.
And actually being looked after in that kind
you
of
get
way.
Service.
Yeah.
And I like the service concept. Definitely. I'm a service person. And I will be glad to pay for it. And I'll pay extra for it. It's
yeah.
a real simple concept.
Definitely. And I think you I'm
know?
Happy to pay
concierge
20%.
Medicine.
Yeah,
guess what? I had a whole health situation a couple years back. I paid for my own medicine. And it was so foreign to the doctors, even in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
for me to say, now look, yes, I'm insured, but I want service. I want to know what the options are, and I'm going to pay for it. It's called cash pay. Are you prepared to take cash?
Yeah.
And it's like people have become afraid of cash, and let's go.
Well,
so anyway.
It's also quite fascinating because I think in our industry especially, service translates to an advantage to the seller. In the way that, yes, okay, you go to a restaurant, you're paying an extra 20% or you're paying more money to receive the food. With the real estate side, you pick your listing agent, they give you the best service. The chances of them achieving a higher price, sales price for you, is higher because of that.
Agree. And so it literally just carries over exactly the same.
Yeah.
You pay for what you get.
Yeah. Definitely.
And you need to vet people. I mean, you vet a restaurant before you get to it. You should probably consider vetting your agent.
Okay, so a little bit of a spin-off on that, Chris. What are your thoughts then on, because we've seen a little bit, and actually not in our markets in LA as much, I think, but in a lot of the markets across the US and the world, of your discount broker now emerging over the last couple of years?
As a real estate community, mm-hmm. what has happened, in my opinion, is we've given our market away and made it available to people whom are not educated to serve the product.
Yeah.
And as we begin to step up as a realtor body and punish bad behavior within the realtor body,
which you know move, is on the ethics board.
Yeah, that's on that professional standards grievance committee. But as we police and we don't allow bad behavior, and we take our market share back and don't give the data away, because why would we do that? It's our data. We created the data.
But how about more of like a Redfin agent then?
Yeah, sure. You pay for what you get.
Yeah.
You know, you got a discount. That's great. But did you get a discount? Because how much did you actually leave on the table?
Yeah.
What would your sale price
have been
if you had an educated person negotiating on your behalf? You may be happy about it, but really and truly, did you dive into the cost? Do you know what the costs are to sell? You have to pay to sell a property, but you don't have to pay everything. There are fees that can be negotiated down. That comes from the lender. That comes from title and escrow, inspections. Where did you potentially drop the ball? That's a question you can just think about, because if you use the discount brokerage, do you know what you paid for?
Do you think that maybe... that's why we're quite lucky in this market, because it's a very affluent area we live in and we are operating
right.
in.
Right.
And so those people really value the service because they've, you know, bought a car from someone and been like
they
screwed
do, but
over.
I am, yes, definitely agree. But I am really puzzled in this market, if you want to talk about comparing markets and such, at some of the behaviors, such as it's a common space. Mm-hmm. in LA to 100% not be able to reach the list agent. You have to go through all these weird doorkeepers.
That's
and
true.
You have to jump through hoops just to sell a property, and the damn thing's already been on the market for a hot minute. Really?
Yeah.
You're too busy to answer. If you're going to interview an agent, hey, you know what I'd do? I'd try to call them. And if you can't reach them, I'm sure your buyer can't. I'm sure your buyer's agent can't. And if they're just trying to hold your property under their wing, once again, are you getting top dollar for it?
Okay, so Chris, let's go back to what you were doing when you started. So you started your brokerage.
Yes.
How long was that after you'd been a licensed agent, and kind of how many transactions were you doing and that kind of thing?
I was rolling.
Okay.
2005, I kind of took off, went to Maui for a year and a half, chilled, studied the market there. That was really cool.
Do you have a property in Hawaii?
No, Jamaica.
No, in Jamaica.
Yeah, that's a property. That's a whole other thing.
But you spent quite a lot of time in Hawaii.
Yeah, like just almost 2 years.
Okay.
Lived there on Maui.
Wow,
look at the Wailea area, which is just brilliant and beautiful. But I went back. I already had my license hung. I already had listings performing, but I was marketing. Listings lasts, like keep you in business. If you don't have any listings, you're out of business.
Yeah.
Went back in and just started, you know, that was 2007-ish.
Okay.
And just, you start slow. I mean, you're not just going to be out of the market. I was great. I was lucky enough. I was lucky enough to have some listings out of the gate. And my reputation superseded me in a positive fashion. people knew of my moral tapestry and knew that I would go the extra mile to take care of them and see that their property got sold. And I did. And it traveled fast in that community.
Yeah.
Then
would you say that's an advantage of kind of starting out being an agent in like a small community?
No, it doesn't matter where you start out. If you know people, then you'll be great. It doesn't matter the size of the community. If you don't know anybody, you don't know anybody, and you got to figure out a way to know people, yeah. which is where I am in LA. And we can touch on that in a moment.
How do you think that would translate? Say you had a restaurant in LA that you were running in like one of the neighborhoods.
I assure you that I would already have a spirit bubble.
You'd have a similar thing, but do you think it would be as dramatic effect as the main restaurant in that area where everyone knows, oh, you know the guy who used to own this?
It's relationship based.
Yeah.
And if you're, it doesn't matter, you know, if you're a deacon in a church or a restaurant owner or whatever your career is or was or where you've come from, it's yeah. relationship based and it's
sphere of influence.
Sphere of influence. And I believe that if people think positively of you, then you don't have to prove yourself.
Yeah.
You know, they know
you're
going
to
do your job.
You have to keep up that positivity.
You have to keep up the positivity. You need to stay in touch with people.
Yeah.
One of the most, the number one tip in the real estate business is creating your contact list, organizing your data, and staying in touch.
Yeah,
so if your top 10, your top 20, you've got to do that. You'll be out of business immediately if you're not. Immediately meaning you might have a couple of successful years and then all of a sudden you'll look up and wonder where everything is and what's happening. And I mean, I have people in my life going through that right now.
Because actually we're always told that, I think, when we start, especially in the US markets, or 90% of your business is going to come from your sphere of influence. You know, you can pay Zillow, you can pay Realtor.com, you can pull in all these leads. And
those are not quality leads.
100%.
They're not quality leads.
It comes from that sphere of influence. I'd like your thoughts on this. So my take actually, and obviously like you join us on LA Mansion Tours. If any of you guys are thinking, what does Chris look like? And you've followed us on Instagram. You're not watching the video. Chris is the guy that drives us around in his beautiful Jaguar, gives us his opinions. Some of which I just like crack up about because I love just hearing your thoughts on some of the finishes that we see. I love it. But my thoughts actually, and the reason why we're so active on social is because I feel that with the distribution of video and audio and picture content for free at the scale that we can now do it,
no brainer.
You can take your sphere of influence and almost create not the same as a sphere of influence because it isn't the same as you shaking someone's hand, chatting to them, reacting to them as if you're face-to-face, but it's almost a larger, more scalable secondary sphere of influence.
Agree. And that is marketing 101,
yeah.
as far as I'm concerned. Marketing and sphere of influence, those are totally different things, but in my opinion, you know, I have arguments with people all the time talking about, oh, print material.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, but print material is 100% appropriate. I can guarantee it because when was the last time you walked into a listing and didn't see something in print?
Yeah,
it goes out, it gets around. If it's nice, it stays. Depending on your market, you might need to be. There might be a real estate book or something that you should be. It depends. Yeah. It's market specific. Nashville, Tennessee is not a print market necessarily. They're a little bit more techie. Mm-hmm. LA's techie, but it's also laid back tech.
Yeah.
Nashville's more advanced tech, in my opinion, as is Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. on some levels, you know. So it's location based as to where you spend your advertising dollars. And you, if you're trying to advertise and you're not using social media platforms, you get an F.
Yeah. So I do feel like we're going through that shift in attention of people used to buy the newspaper every morning. People
that's
used
over.
To always watch their TV. Yeah, that's now become the smartphone. But actually also there are, I think that like, cause we are obviously always discussing this and spending a lot of time around each other, but there's also a huge amount of like friction for these new things that some of it doesn't pay off. Like mind is going to yesterday.
I just paid a couple $100 for a new, what's it called? What's the, I don't even have it. I'm so pathetic. Not Echo, but Alexa.
Amazon Alexa device.
I guess what zip code I have.
What zip code?
90049.
Oh, you got one of those.
I'm the
points.
Agent on Alexa. Yeah. So we just talked to Alexa about Chris Ricks. Yeah. Alexa, who's the best realtor in 90049? If I don't pop up, please let me know because I need to get a refund.
Well, yeah, because we've got that one, I think, for Venice and Ocean Park. But similarly, I don't use that yet.
No, neither do I, but I want to go ahead and lock it down just in case. 100%. So some of it's trial and error. I cannot tell you how many failed dollars I've spent. Mm-hmm. But, and then you don't know if you're going to, like, that's, okay, you want to know how I got started for real?
Yeah.
In the tech world, the tech side of it, when the world started viewing me, there's this thing called Zillow, Realtor.com, and Trulia, and those did not used to be
If you're listening not in the US, that basically is a
third party
aggregator, So you Google buying a house, whatever, first websites that come up, can have everything on the market.
We feed our data back in off of the MLS to those people,
yeah,
including the Redfins and everybody else. It's a data exchange. At any rate, those did not used to be tied to the MLS. They were new platforms.
Yeah.
In order to put your property out there,
you had to upload it though.
Manually. Yeah. And I think I was probably the first person in my area that exercised those platforms, which immediately catapulted me and my exposure, which then turned around to sales, which turned into referrals, which turned into listings. Then I had a huge listing portfolio. At one point, I think I had about 80 listings on my own.
Wow.
I was double ending deals left and right. Why? Because I had a book of business. They called me to look at a house. They didn't necessarily like that house, but guess what? I had five others in the same price point.
Definitely.
You know, you don't show people 100 houses. Mm-hmm. You know, they know what's on the market. And that's another thing that I've always been good to do is listen to someone and hear what they're saying,
yeah,
and pair them with a property. I don't need to spend my life running around in a car showing property. I'm going to know my inventory. Mm-hmm. I'm going to listen to what you say. And I'm going to give you what's available, the best that's available.
Yeah.
And guess what? I'm not going to spend a lot of time closing the deal. That's how I do it. I know how to pair people with properties.
Okay, so I like it that we've got some good background about kind of what you started and how you kind of got going. Obviously, you still got a brokerage back home.
I own my own brokerage there.
So how does that work with you currently being in LA?
The internet.
So basically, you've got a couple of agents there.
I do. I have an executive broker and a licensee, both of which I'm grateful for. They both came to me at different times, and I said, you know, they were trying to get into the business, wanted to interview another brokerage or two. So there's a service and a disservice, and I'm grateful because I got to work with them from scratch. They did not have bad habits. I got to teach them and mentor them into a business where I was immediately able to see their success because they didn't have to door knock or things that you might end up having to do as a new agent or just search for knowledge. Like, you know, you walk into this business.
They have the ability to shadow you, see how you did it, see how the business works.
And I'm grateful. You know, the disservices, they've never had to be at another agency and try to figure it out. You walk into an agency, you may have a desk or a place to sit or whatever, and then what?
Yeah.
You know? So they've never had that experience. The backside of this, they've never had that experience.
Yeah.
I'm glad. That's not a good experience. No. The old brokerage model is broken.
It is.
It's been broken for years. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
So what ended up bringing you to LA, Mr. Ricks? What was it? Because obviously you presumably had a business there that was going well. You were big in your community.
Do you know, when we were talking about the restaurant, and I said that I needed to change because I had plateaued.
Yeah.
I'd done the same thing in real estate there.
Yeah.
With my personal feel. Can you do more? You can always do more. Can you do things different? You can always do things different. But once you get to a place in any type of situation where you no longer feel like, you know, your value is, or you're just not really progressing. You're just at a stagnant place.
Okay.
I had reached a stagnant place. I needed excitement. I needed new challenges. It's all personal. You know,
so was there a moment where you kind of looked at your life and you're like, you know what? I want to be in LA and I'm going to regret this if I don't move over there and keep my business 100%. Here,
I mean, you would understand. I had, at that point, you know, I had all the cars, I had all the houses. You know, literally, I still have a great house there.
So you made it in your own head of like
success. Of what that thought of success was at that point. Mm-hmm. And with a lot of my sphere at that point, you know. But that, you know, wasn't the type of success that I was looking for solely. I appreciate that. I love it. I still work it every day, literally every day. I still work that part of my life. It's still a very major part of my life, but I wanted to learn more, see more culture, have more. I love the coastal life. I mean,
yeah.
You surf, I snorkel, which not obviously not here, but I went on a whale watch the other day. Can't go on a whale watch in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
I suppose actually that probably came from you spending that couple of years in Hawaii as
100%.
Well. Yeah.
100%. But those are the things that I like.
Yeah.
I like to be outdoors. I like to do beach walks. I like to have like really amazing food. And
is the climate similar to where you're from?
Because I've never been there. Like 30 right now.
Oh wow!
In Arkansas,
okay.
It's like it rains a lot. It's really cool. Deciduous trees, yeah. And pine, and like
big some change of, in the seasons.
Some of the best crystals in the world come from Hot Springs, Arkansas. There's thermal waters there. The water's great. The air's great. I'm sorry, air quality in LA really like it's
a bit yellow.
Like I had my favorite investment was air purifiers so far in LA. You know, but you know, it's a totally different life there.
Yeah.
It's a different culture, and that goes with real estate. What's the difference between here and there in real estate?
Mm-hmm.
It's all culture and communication, and words are interchangeable, and I'm sure it's the same where you're from, but it's a slightly different culture, but everybody's trying to reach the same goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's another zero or two added here. But it's the same process.
Yeah. But there's also like there's an element of like people who don't want to leave where they grew up from.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
I get that. But
it's kind of because I've never like seen that, and obviously I grew up in London, and so it's a little bit different than growing up in like a little country village and then wanting to move to a big city. You know, I'd always say like, you know, I'd want to be in a city somewhere because I'm used to being able to walk out my front door and, you know.
I'm in a country village and I'm wanting to move to the city.
And that's
I don't want everything to close at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I'm 22 years old.
And that's it. But then I've got cousins who turn around and they're like, oh, you know, like, I can't wait until I, you know, get married, have a kid, and can move back out of the city.
And maybe I will, and I have that option.
Yeah.
I've kept that option. This is what I'm doing now, and this is what I enjoy now, and maybe there'll be a time where I no longer enjoy LA. I can't see ever permanently leaving LA. I think I'd probably have a place here until I died.
Yeah.
And maybe likewise Hot Springs. I can't tell you for sure about either way. Hell, I might move to Italy.
I quite like that outlook on life, though, Chris, because I think a lot of people try and plan their lives out quite significantly.
I tried that, and that didn't work.
Yeah, it does.
I had a bunch of other plans, and
yeah.
You know what? And if you just listen, and you listen to yourself and
make
your
the best of
enjoyment,
yeah.
You might, if you just listen, you might realize that maybe some of the plans you made are no longer the same plans, and you need to reevaluate.
Because change is constant, isn't it? Not just
it
with you, yourself, and what you want. Also, like, you have no idea what society is going to be like in a year.
Yeah, exactly.
What, you know.
And people, like, freak out because, oh my God, I've lost my job and my life's ending. Mm-hmm. And hell, they even killed themselves. I'm like, really? You didn't lose your job. You just got an opportunity for a whole new life.
Yeah.
Let's go and restart it. Just know what's happening and make the change and go figure it out.
Be positive,
and
if you make the best of the situation you're in.
And aren't making it somewhere, then maybe you're not supposed to make it there. And maybe you need to move on and find out what's plan B. Because your plan A didn't work or isn't working any longer.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Always look on the positive side and just adapt.
I try.
And try and change everything.
I try.
Yeah.
I try to have a good time right now.
So, I think actually the topic that we're wanting to just make sure that everyone who's listening and watching is actually something that you, I think, have a very unique position on, which a lot of people probably think about quite a lot. It's like, oh, you know, I moved to New York and I'm an agent here, or I, you know, I'm living in a small little village and I'm the dominant agent in this area and I want to move to a big city and I'm kind of scared about doing that. What has your experience been of working in two separate markets at the same time? Is that difficult? Because I always think, like, I know my price per square foot
being
for different areas.
Being top dog and then knowing no one.
Well, yeah. I mean, that must be a weird reshift. But equally, like, running the business when you've got two different markets with two very different parts of the world.
Average price per square foot in Hot Springs, Arkansas is probably $75 per square foot. And here it's, what, $900 to
1,000? 100%.
How about that for starters?
So that, is it hard for you to keep your head in both markets?
No, it's not. Look, I think of it like you're just driving around, you know, and you learn the areas and you know why an area might be more valuable in another area.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see it in the real estate realm when you actually start dialing into the schematics of real estate and how it really works, especially on the backside with what we do, property valuations and locations. And so, you know, I still have to stay dialed in, and I'm doing that by, I still have listings in Hot Springs.
I suppose you've got a couple of agents there.
Well, I just poked a new listing in the MLS the other day.
You
know, I've got contracts coming across my desk that they're writing, that people are writing on my listings. I'm in the MLS nonstop in Hot Springs. I'm in the MLS nonstop here. I don't necessarily need to do caravan in Hot Springs anymore to learn the inventory. I kind of know what's going on there.
Do you think you'd be able to do the same thing if you had started in both markets at the same time and 50-50 split?
That's a great question. No, I don't. I feel like I learned that market. I feel like in as far as I'm concerned and as far as my personal needs are, I've mastered that market.
Yeah.
I've done countless transactions. Okay. Countless. I don't even know how many hundreds of transactions I've done or thousands. I have no idea. I don't care. I don't think like that. I'm like, okay, these people need help. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I get a check, which is great.
Who's the next person that needs help?
Yeah. And I've my business so far up until this point has been bailing people out of trouble a lot of times that other agents have put them in. That's been a huge thing. Doing both markets at the same time would probably be difficult as a new agent.
Yeah.
You need to learn, you need to get a footing first. You need to
nail your process.
You need to let your ego fly, and then you need to get knocked. You need to get knocked down.
Yeah.
You need to get back to reality and learn that there are other people, and people that you may have taken for granted and not given the proper respect to. You might need to realize that they might have done a deal or two as well, and have some additional knowledge to bring to the table, because everyone does.
Definitely.
Everyone does, and that's what's really cool. So until you get your feet planted and learn your way around, and learn your way through the trenches of real estate and how to navigate, I think
focus on one market.
I think a single market focus is going to be your best long-term knowledge builder that will allow you to go into another market.
Yeah. And is that kind of when you are now doing transactions in LA and in Arkansas, mm-hmm. are there enough differences in the way of like contracts and inspection time frames and all of that kind of thing where you're ever kind of thinking, oh no, hold on a second, I caught myself there, that's Arkansas, not LA, or the other way around?
The only thing that, and it's a non-issue, but the biggest difference California versus Arkansas are the level of disclosures. And I can understand why California is a litigious state, because I do not believe that the contracts
are very good,
are put together well to protect the public or to protect the realtor. And I feel like those contracts could be streamlined and have a much better place for the agent and the back-end user being the client experience. There's a disclosure to disclose, and knowing the contracts and how to use the contracts and when to use the contracts is again what the client's paying for. So that whole knowledge thing, and back to that discount brokerage thing. So you know, I'm glad that I've had my foundation in another market, because I do know how to navigate, and I can look out for people, and that's what I'm most grateful for.
I suppose there's quite big advantages in that, in a way that, like, when you're working in a market and all of the agents in this office and every office around here, it's almost, you become part of the culture of, this is how it's done, and getting that fresh perspective before you come in of how it's done in a different way is definitely, I think, going to give you an advantage to be like, no, hold on, how if we structure it like this, because I've seen it done differently.
Yeah, and that ties right into our sales meeting today, and California culture. Northern California is a pre-inspection, pre-survey, pre-disclosure. You have it ready to go, and what does that do? It protects you as an agent. It protects the buyer. It protects the seller. It speeds up the close.
Mm-hmm.
And that's some new knowledge here in LA. And I've been doing that my whole life.
Yeah.
You know?
And how do you think that is the reason behind, because we were talking about this yesterday, I think, when we were on LA Mansion Tours, is that 50% of the real estate suing and the court cases are in California. 75% of those 50% are in Southern California as opposed to Northern California.
Right.
Do you think that has a big effect on it in terms of those numbers?
Well, I think that we have a lot of agents and a few brokers.
Yeah.
There is not the level of mentoring in this business across the entire United States of America happening, in my opinion, to turn someone loose with a contract representing most of the time someone's most valuable asset.
Okay.
I don't know how I can say that any different. We have a major education situation, and a major disclosure situation, mm-hmm. and a major, at the end of the day, communication situation. And if we started at the communication level, we wouldn't have a disclosure problem. We wouldn't have an education problem. Because you might be a brand new agent, and it's okay to do your first deal. And it's okay to say, you know what, that's a great question. I do not know the answer to that. Yeah. I'm going to write it down, and I'm going to get right back with you. Rather than doing a BO, a so blurt out.
Not a fan of, so faking it till you make it.
No, that's not real. That's not real. Don't potentially damage your reputation. Get the information.
Yeah.
Put a pause on things. Don't answer the call. Get the information, then call them back. Mm-hmm. Don't give the wrong information out. Don't give misinformation. Just hold on a second. Let's get the information.
Because that just boils again, you're right. Communication boils back down.
You told
me.
You know?
Because it's like your reputation is everything, especially in this business.
100%. It is in life.
And you're only as good as your last at bat.
It is in the whole life.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows a scumbag in their community. Mm-hmm.
And it's quite funny, actually, being in the realtor community in LA, you hear the little whispers, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You can't help it.
Did you hear about that guy? He just got sued for this.
Yeah. And I love it, because when I hear that, I listen further. I keep listening, and I'm processing in my mind on an ethical standpoint and a Department of Real Estate standpoint, on an MLS standpoint. I'm actually processing the entire transaction. I'm listening to the sound bites of the little gossip snippets, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to believe that this guy's innocent until proven guilty. And I'm like, what's missing? Oh, you failed to disclose your agency? Yeah. Guilty! Yeah. You know? You misled someone on the price? Guilty! You know? But everyone should have the opportunity to do the right thing. And if they've clearly not done the right thing, most of the time, though, goes back to disclosure and communication. Those are the reasons we're in court. Being sued, whatever, those are the reasons. Yeah. Communication and disclosure, and because you're busy is no excuse. Slow down your wheel. I've been guilty of it. Everybody's guilty of it in the business that's had a stream of business, because it just...
But
you absolutely must slow down the wheel and protect your client. And, you know, we take for granted... Here's something that's kind of... I feel like this is an important soundbite. We're in the business. I'm sorry, but... We have listeners that probably don't know what the MLS is, and we take that for granted. You know, people don't know that what the surveyor does or why he's even coming to the property.
Yeah.
People don't understand how serious the termite contract is. They don't know that. Yeah. Why would they know that? I didn't know that.
They're not dealing with it day to day like we do.
Right. And then all of a sudden their house is eaten and it's fallen down. Yeah. So slowing down and educating the consumer, that's our job, to protect the consumer. That's our job.
Do you think that the real estate license test should be more difficult?
That test is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And I'll give you a very clear and concise question. This is a question that I had to know the answer to in order to pass the California licensure procedure. What was the population of California in 2004? Siri. You know, come on.
Yeah.
Let's get down to brass tacks. Let's teach people how to sell real estate.
Because it is. It's basically just more of a how do you pass a multiple choice test as opposed to actually like the valuable information that you're picking up. On that as well then, okay, if you're a new agent, if you're sitting here listening to our podcast right now and you're saying, right, you know what? I've heard what Rick's and Ed have said. This is for me. I want to get into the industry. Tomorrow I'm going to apply to start studying my test. I'm going to start looking into what's going to make my business go. What are the main things you say? Obviously, education, I think, is very important. Do you do that regularly?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Do I do education?
Still regularly.
Okay, so, and this is funny. In Arkansas, it's 60 hours to get your license, 60 classroom hours.
Yeah.
And then LA, I can't remember what it is, but...
I think it's 39 or something, maybe.
Is it? Whatever. So, but there's three books that you have to go through, and... So it's different. I actually did the licensure process for California twice, not because I failed, because I wanted to re-look at the data. I sat through the initial 60 hours in Arkansas, I think, three times.
Yeah.
And I did that in the form of, see, I did it at home here because I already know the information. I clicked through it, the test was a breeze for me because I know it. I've been doing it for 15 years. There's very slight differences in California versus Arkansas, but the point is, you have to do CE afterwards. When I did my CE in Arkansas as a beginning agent, I didn't do that 6 hour or 10 hour, 12, whatever it is. I didn't do that. I just sat through the 60 hours again. Because every time you take a class, you learn more. You must continue your knowledge. And I think that if you're doing the minimum CE requirements that a state has, then you're already setting yourself up for failure because you're not really furthering your education. And if you're going to do something, you got to continue to learn and grow. And you don't do that solely by closing transactions.
Definitely. Because I think it's the same in any industry you're in. It is. Okay, you're a doctor. Oh, wow, we've got a new medical thing that's evolved. There's a new drug. Like, if you're not on top of that, you're not giving the best service.
You're not
clients.
Relevant. You're
same
not
with a lawyer. Oh, they changed the law about this. Same with a banker.
Tax preparers.
100%.
You know?
And so actually, I feel you're absolutely right. Like, because a lot of people look at real estate agents and they kind of think, oh, you know, because I think that there is a little bit of that negative stigma around our industry where you see a huge amount of people that do the role part-time. Mm-hmm. Or a huge amount of people who have licenses but don't actually really do transactions.
And I'm going to cross a line here, and I don't really care whose little feelers get hurt, but if you're in real estate part-time, if someone tells you they're in real estate part-time, run.
Yeah.
Run.
Because, you're going to be paying them
there's
the
no
same
such
amount of
thing.
Money for less than half.
You're going to end up, very potentially end up in a bad situation.
And if someone's saying that to you at a listing presentation, they're saying, well, I'm a half part-time or whatever it is, what does that mean when on Saturday afternoon they get a phone call from someone wanting to see the property and they're out with their kids or they're, doing
that? And the other part-time is, I have my license. I've never done anything ever in my entire life, but all of a sudden I'm a professional on the kit. No. If you're a part-time person and you've got your... I had that sent to me by someone in the little, Beverly Wood area. I'm part-time. I don't answer my... What do you... Okay.
Yeah.
If you're not... The problem with that is this part-time and not having enough knowledge is you're already breaching your fiduciary responsibility to the client.
Yeah, definitely.
You're not putting their interests first and helping them get into a property because you maybe don't have the education.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Here's the caveat. If someone says they're part-time, and here's the part-time where you don't necessarily run, I've got some people that'll help me. I've got a team. I've got someone. Then go, if they're your friend or your family or whatever, then let's go with it. But make sure that you've got the background to help you through the transaction. It's part of the interview process.
Well, that was the thing as well, because I cut my teeth in the London market. But actually, in the London market, it works very differently, where you only really have one agent in every transaction. And the agent is listing and representing the seller and then going out to find buyers. So you don't have two sides of the transaction. So we were always taught, whenever you're walking clients into the property, never assume, because assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups. Never walk into a property and think, oh, well, I think this is a piece of shit and I think this is overpriced, and say all of that stuff out there.
Well, that's just the wrong thing, because they may absolutely love that.
100%.
I can't tell you how many times I've put my foot in my
mouth.
Like, some of my best clients, still to this day, I love them dearly.
Yeah.
I hope they hear the podcast. Yeah. And they know, I know, it's no secret.
Yeah.
We bought this fabulous lake house, and it had this pristine mint green shag carpet.
Yeah.
Looked like it never been walked on from the 80s. It may not have been from the 80s, but still the color, the mint green, really, it's not really...
Today's so, kind of taste.
They got it. They loved it. It was fine. They lived with it, and they decorated with it, and it was fine. And there was nothing wrong with the carpet. It was my opinion of the shade.
Definitely.
I had some catch up with my foot.
Yeah.
Guess what? I relisted the property. Guess what the property had? Guess what it had? The same carpet that actually was still pristine.
Yeah.
They, based on my suggestion... On the resale, we changed the carpet out for the resale.
Yeah.
We brought good value for the house.
Yeah.
I think it would have been a stumbling block on the resale. Yeah. But, I don't go out. What I do is, in that scenario, is I make sure defects are noted.
Yeah.
Hey, I know you love this house, but do you realize that huge leak on the ceiling right there, there's a giant crack in the foundation that I can walk through? That's our job. And our job isn't to overspeak if we don't have the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But if we see something, we might need to get the correct knowledgeable person in.
Yeah.
Be the source of the source for them to get the correct information.
But not on taste.
But maybe the color scheme and maybe that granite pattern's their favorite.
Yeah. So in fact, going back to that one, we saw a property last week on Elm.
Oh,
you were not
I didn't see
fan
it.
Of.
But I closed my eyes. I don't care if it was $22 million.
Try to actively forget about it now. Okay, so I think that's been awesome, Chris. I just want to actually round it up with a couple of things. What I want to get onto in a little second is just, if you were a new agent, if you were that 20-year-old, 21-year-old, going into the industry again, you know, what would be the main tips that you give them? But first, what is your predictions? And obviously, I want to say this to our listeners, that we are not that like Nostradamus role of predicting the future. All we can do is basically just kind of weigh it up based on what we've seen over the last couple of years and how we are. What do you think the market's going to do in LA, and what do you think it's going to do in Arkansas over the next couple of years?
I think it's going to do exactly the same thing. And
yeah.
And
the being, because actually people...
Well, I'm going to do a broad statement, and I'm going to do a micro statement. The micro statement is, what market are you referring to? Mm-hmm. And that's the greatest question I've heard in a hot minute. And that is because the general person asks you, what do you think about the market? And that person... who's asking the question, for one, because that is a different market that they might be talking about now. Yeah. So first of all, I want to know what market you're talking about.
So
the global market, and what you're thinking is LA versus Hot Springs.
And I'm thinking general, not what's the condo market.
So general, I'm going to go to a really blanket and clear and obvious rule of economics. Peaks and troughs, and we go up and down, supply and demand, levelization of the market. That's that. We're not in a bad market. We're in a good market right now.
So you think it's going
to
be
in my opinion, in LA specific, there is inventory. Mm-hmm. How long has it been in the market? How overpriced is it?
Yeah.
Guess what? We're not in necessarily. People are worried about it not being a good market because we're not having multiple offers. Well, we're not having multiple offers because the prices aren't exactly correct. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that might be, in a buyer standpoint, maybe a better market because they're not having to fight to get a house and they can actually get the house and not necessarily overpay.
So more stability.
I think we're in more stability right now. Yeah. A seller can still sell a house and get great money. They're not, shouldn't be over water unless they just bought incorrectly, which that has happened.
Definitely.
And it still happens today, even though we're not in a bad...
Right?
Yeah, it's still present. I mean, there's still people over, you know. But a person can cash out. They can receive great money for their property, you know.
And you're not seeing any things on the horizon where you're like, oh, hold on a second, like we did in, obviously, 2007, where mortgage companies...
Yeah, I feel like we could be back approaching some potential danger zones as... money availability has loosened up in the fact that we are back to low doc loans again.
Yeah.
We are back to multiple loans on the 80-20s and balloon notes, and that's going to could potentially create a new crisis. What if a loan program isn't available with these arms, these 5-, 3-, 5-, 10-year arms? Mm-hmm. What if there's not a loan program? What if rates have gone too high? What if they can't requalify? There's a lot of things you should really think about before you get creative financing, I think. And I've always erred on the caution side. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote mortgages. I didn't tell you about that part, but that's another thing. I wrote mortgages temporarily, and I was in the no-doc loan situation. I had a dear friend. Here it is. I want this. I'm like, no, I can make this loan to you. Mm-hmm. You are going to foreclose. You're not going to make this. This is dangerous for you. I do not recommend this. Yeah. Guess what?
Foreclosed.
They got the loan somewhere else and foreclosed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very clear. I was like, here are the numbers. Mm-hmm. This is way out of whack.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of people fall into that.
I hope we don't get back to that. But I feel like there's going to be some elements of it.
Because I think that there is a lot of that element of people who see the market do 10% a year over the last 3 years. They get into that short-term mindset of, oh, well, I'm going to buy it, but don't worry, even if I can't quite afford it, even if I sell it in a year,
vacation.
I'm going to make 10% on it.
Yeah, and the vacation rental situation, I'll just rent all these properties.
Definitely.
I'm going to throw one more thing in. This is going to be really cool for you and I to keep our finger on the pulse of and watch. And I saw this, and this is part of the crisis we had before. The market started turning. Builders were cranking out product and saturated the market.
Yeah.
We had an extremely oversaturated market. We did not have enough people to buy the inventory. We didn't have any renters, right? Now, I know LA is a huge place. I know there are a lot of people here. I know we have a housing crisis as it is anyway. What I'm really intrigued by is the amount of development in LA. One thing, and I'm going to spin off and I'm going to come back, but this has not had enough attention. This is the biggest downtown renovation in our lifetime. We'll never see a downtown renovation like we're seeing in Los Angeles, California. There hasn't been enough press on it. I feel like it should be receiving international press, mm-hmm. because what they've done in 2 and 4 years in downtown Los Angeles is absolutely incredible with the architecture and the retrofitting and the remodel that's done. It's brilliant. It's beautiful. It should have more attention. We'll never see anything like this in the entire world in our entire lifetime. Mm-hmm. It's that cool. Spinning back to that, what I was just talking about before that is the amount of units that has created. There are a ton of new units downtown. There's a huge amount of new construction, huge developments going in the marina. And all over Los Angeles, you can see dotted everywhere is new construction. Big, big projects going up. Not 10-unit complexes on a lot, but huge, huge projects going up. And I'm wondering, as these things are popping right up and getting finished quickly, and I'm not questioning the quality, what I am questioning is the amount of new inventory versus buyers, renters, etc. I am afraid
oversupply.
That we may see an oversupply in Los Angeles very soon.
So it will actually probably be kind of like what happened in Manhattan, because we've seen that, I think, over the last few years from the agents I've spoken to there, where everyone wants to be on this little island, Manhattan, in New York, There was such a shortage for such a long amount of time that then they put up so many units in that area that it was kind of got to a point where it turned into a buyer's market.
Right.
Because it was
I think it can happen a couple of different ways here. We've seen a lot of private money. So they may take the for sales off and lease them potentially at a lower rate until the supply goes down, and then they can put the stuff back on. Okay. But how that ties back into the crisis that happened before is when you're on the lending side, you finish a part of the project, you get a draw, I hope the lenders are paying close attention, because if they're finishing and we're getting draws and we're finishing and getting draws and then a new project goes along and we're not selling out the old project, we're going to be back in that very similar crisis on the building, new construction.
Yeah, and I've heard some rumors actually about Metropolis, because I don't know if you knew, last year we had a $100 million listing, which is a Salvation Army piece of land, mm-hmm. opposite the Metropolis Towers, and we had a couple of bidders on that. Unfortunately, we did not get a deal agreed, because we also heard the Metropolis was struggling to sell Tower 2 and Tower 3, and that they were basically trying to package them all together and sell them on to another developer, which was an interesting one. Right, so let's round it up. We're almost at an hour now, so thank you so much for joining us, because I want to just actually finish up with just 3 points. If you were an agent right now, 21 years old, getting into the industry, what are the 3 things that you would pass on as a tip to yourself or to any other of the agents thinking about that?
One, choose wisely with who you're affiliated with.
Yeah.
Do some research on their reputation, because you're going to be taking on a portion of that. Find yourself a mentor. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing.
I like that.
Create your sphere and make sure you're setting yourself up to where you have all your communication well-rounded, if it's in Google or wherever it is, but get your communication accessible and organized out of the door. Get that done and maintain that. That's your key. If you ever want to exit the business, that's what you're selling. You know, everybody wants a exit strategy as well. So start out organized and figure out, if you don't know how to get organized, then look to your mentor, because your mentor will hopefully be able to direct you. And if they don't, maybe you guys can learn it together.
Yeah.
But the organization is the key to the business.
I like it. Okay, so Chris, if anyone out there, which I'm sure a lot of them will, want to ask you any questions, they want to get in touch with you, they want to sell a house in Arkansas, how can they get hold of you?
I have a cell phone that I answer, for one.
Yeah. Do you want to give everyone your
501
627-4075.
That number again is 501-627-4075. And if you want to hit me on the social at RIX Chris, CHRIS on Insta.
Yeah.
And Chris N as in Nancy, Ricks on Facebook.
Nice. You on Twitter or any of those?
I am, but I Twitter, pitter patter.
Yeah, I'm not a big active Twitter fan, just for the business.
I'm an Instagrammer.
That's it.
I'm a Facebooker.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. If you have any questions for Chris, definitely reach out to us at any point. Let us know if you want to get in touch with him or you're struggling at all in any way. And I would love it if you guys could just make a comment, thank him for actually joining us on the podcast today, and kind of give us any feedback. If there are any points here that we didn't go into enough detail on, or anything else the way you think that we really should address something else that's coming up, let us know, and I'm sure we'd love to have Chris back again, hopefully in a couple of weeks, and talk about any other topics that are arising, coming up. And actually, we need to do one, Chris, I think, on the ethics committee side of it.
Oh, boy. Because I think that's an inside. I'm excited.
In fact, are you allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, I can talk about things.
Just not say names and
I mean, there are so many different scenarios that we can discuss that we don't have to even refer to case or name.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not even necessary.
But I like to hear about the trends, because I think that's very interesting.
Trends are very interesting, yeah. Yes they are. And it ties into the market and what's going on in the market. And several things we talked about today. Definitely. Communication, disclosure, mm-hmm. education.
And the changing of the distribution of information.
Absolutely.
How are we going to evolve our ethics with that? Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. Have a fantastic week. And thank you so much, Chris. And we will be back with more LA Mansion tours next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Tuesday.
Perfect. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.